Off the Rails from the U.S. Faster Payments Council.
And Executive Director of the U.S. Faster Payments Council, and this is Off the Rails from the U.S. Faster Payments Council, sponsored by Open Payment Network. This time, we will be sitting down with Kirsten Trusco, co-founder of Payments as a Lifeline. Kirsten and I will talk about the need for collaboration in disaster relief funding, fraud, and the profitability of engaging in that market. But first, the headlines. This episode is going live on day two of the FPC's spring member meeting, so hopefully a lot of you are listening to it on your way home from Orlando. A big thank you once again to all of our spring member meeting sponsors: ACI Worldwide, Aloya Corporate Federal Credit Union, BNY Mellon, Finsley, Form 3, Identify, Jack Henry, MyTech Systems, Neach, North American Banking Company, Pacific Coast Bankers Bank, Shazam, The Clearinghouse, Trustly, and Verafin. And if you'd like to add your name to this list of sponsors for the fall member meeting in Denver, Colorado, please reach out. There are tons of sponsorship opportunities still available. FPC members, you should have already gotten several renewal notices, and we are so excited to continue working with you to advance the FPC's mission of safe, easy-to-use, ubiquitous, faster payments. If you're listening and you aren't a member, now is a great time to join. 2024 is going to be a huge year in faster payments, and the FPC is the center of that action. Head to fasterpaymentscouncil.org to apply for membership. Membership includes access to members-only content, unlimited access to workgroup activities, members-only webinars, the ability to run for our board of directors and vote for board members, and unlimited attendance at our twice-annual in-person member meetings. And that's enough for the headlines. It's time for that conversation with Kirsten Trusco of Payments as a Lifeline. All right, we're joined by Kirsten Trusco of Payments as a Lifeline. Thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here.
All right, let's get right into it. And I'll start with some background on Payments as a Lifeline, because I think it probably is something that not everybody in our audience is going to be familiar with. Obviously, I think most people are probably familiar with you personally, but this venture you're working on is super important. I want to make sure you get a chance to talk about that. So, you know, who are you working with? What are you trying to do? What is what's the size of the need that you're trying to address?
Well, Reid, thank you for asking. Indeed, I am really excited to be on here. As a longtime payments geek, you spend your career looking for not only markets that can be electronified for payments, but where you can really make a difference. It sounds corny, make a difference in the U.S. and in the world with the knowledge of your friends and your network. So how big is this market? The size of this need is large and growing in the U.S. alone. Estimates, and these are a few years old, is that it's about $100 billion a year in payments that need to be converted, modernized. If we include the fact that a lot of aid, humanitarian aid and disaster, currently goes out in goods, like boxes of stuff, it's more than 2x that. So imagine that size of market. And the focus is on any kind of financial aid, whether it's chronic aid needs, where you've got people experiencing homelessness, people coming out of other challenges in life, and they need money over 1 to 5 years. The second batch is immediate after disaster. You got to get people funds immediately to get safe and to stabilize. And then long-term recovery. And I didn't know this at the beginning, but recovery from any disaster can take 3 to 7 years and sometimes longer. So we're working with three different groups. So Payments as a Lifeline is a 501c3. It is a coalition of some of the top fintech, care tech, prop tech, gov tech companies, insure tech that have come together. And there's three groups: the funders, the people who have the money trying to get it out. So that's government, federal, state, and local, some of the largest corporate foundations, NGOs, nonprofits. So that's the first group. The second are the delivery teams, the armies of case managers. They might be public sector or private. They are the ones who help the people and the small businesses in need to understand what they might be eligible for, how to get to those funds, helps them apply, help them receive the funds. And then the third is our crew, Reed, the fintech and payments companies. We're really not the last mile. We're like the last foot of delivering aid, making sure that those funds go into the hands of the people or the businesses in need. It could be a card, it could be an e-card, a QR code. There's all kinds of areas.
Yeah, there's a huge need there. I mean, I think we've all seen it in the news. I'd say that, the last few years, lots of wildfires, hurricanes, natural disasters of various types that affect people. So I kind of want to, before we geek out on the payment aspect of it, which obviously we're going to do, I did want to zoom out a bit because I think it's good for this audience to kind of hear, what happens and describe for us, what happens to a vulnerable population in particular when a disaster, say a hurricane or a wildfire, hits their city, destroys homes, et cetera? What's that like? And how does immediate financial assistance from government or NGOs make an impact?
So, first of all, in any disaster, everyone is impacted. I don't care if you've got a $4 million house down the street, you're financially negatively impacted. But the most vulnerable, as someone who spent a lifetime seeking to serve the underbanked and underserved, you have people who are living paycheck to paycheck, week to week, and then the job goes away, there's housing instability, there's food instability, you just push them off a cliff. So there's three different tranches of need in a disaster. The first one is immediate. Let's get the family out and safe out of the disaster zone. The next is stabilization. You can't go back to your home. It maybe not for a month, maybe not for 3 years. So there's that temporary living and stability. And then there's a long-term recovery that can be 3 to 7 years or maybe longer to get back in. I just read a statistic that said that in a disaster, 40% of small businesses will not survive. And of those who come back, 25% won't make it. And then I saw another stat that said if families, if people can't get back and stable into their homes and schools and jobs within 12 months, 25% will never come back. So this is a really big topic in an election year of elected officials trying to tell this story of the importance of something like payments as a lifeline.
Yeah, and I'd say while this, like so many payments applications we hear about today, it sounds a bit like a charitable endeavor. You mentioned that you guys are a 501c3, which of course is a charitable designation. But it also makes business sense, right? So talk about, the opportunities for folks who are in the industry, who are in this space to profit, right? Doing well by doing good, I think you hear people say a lot, right?
It's funny you kicked off with that because that's literally the first thing I was going to talk about is doing well while doing good. And there's a fallacy that, I didn't realize it was incorrect either until I got so neck deep in this topic. Whether it's government or NGOs or nonprofits, everybody understands no margin, no mission. You can't sustainably serve a market this size and consistently not even break even or not turn a profit on it. And that's one of the misperceptions in it truly evangelizing this out to the financial services industry is, and this is part of why Powell was formed, every other mature industry has a industry group that runs at a hum. They run at readiness constantly. And when there's a disaster, they kick into gear. So the airlines industry, electricity, water, medicine. But in financial services, and I've been involved in this topic since Katrina, right? So since 2005, every time there's a disaster, we as financial services, God bless the efforts, we're going to dive in there and help, but we're building a plane while it's flying. So it's not repeatable, it's not sustainable. The doors fall off, stuff falls out. The idea with Palin, the reason it's a 501c3 is we need as financial services to stand up and be adults and have this organization. So we're standing at the ready. And in doing research for PAL, reaching out to airlines and electrical and all that, those are contracts. Those are long-term profitable contracts that those for-profit companies have to service government communities, corporates and all. So part of my passion in PAL is we can do this. It is doing well while doing good. We just have to pilot and be prepared. One of the key roles PAL plays is as a connector and a translator and a collaborator. So there's some very large government organizations and large NGOs that have said, look, PAL, you kind of straddle the public and the private sector. You get the fintech and the insurance and all that. But you also understand government and nonprofit. And so we've got a number of pilots we've run and pilots that are coming up and full deployments where it took bringing government, nonprofit, and corporates together to make something work. But you can't do it in the middle of a hurricane. This takes months to put together, which is why I really speak strongly in this season. So we've got time to be ready for hurricanes.
Right. So actually be prepared before the hurricane hits, you mean? Weird.
Imagine that. Hurricane, fire, tornado, you know, pick your disaster.
At the same time, I think this is probably something that a lot of people are thinking right now as they're listening to this. Like, there is a need for better processes when it comes to disaster relief financing, particularly federal government funding. I think everyone, I would guess, has heard at least at a high level or how much was lost from COVID relief funding that the federal government sent out in terms of, fraud that was occurring in that program. That's actually not unique to COVID, unfortunately. There's lots of fraud that happens when the government's paying out money every year in the tax season, even, which is not related to disasters at all. And I think, to what a large extent that has unfortunately become a bit of a political partisan football. The prospect of reducing losses would obviously enable more dollars to reach the people that they're intended for. So, give us a sense for, the level of losses we're talking about, where they're going, and then, how that could be prevented or at least reduced.
Absolutely. And this is one of my favorite stand on a soapbox and thump your chest, right? To say, having spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill, when the money was first appropriated, the first trillion, I'll stick with COVID because you brought that up. The first trillion was appropriated and called some friends on the Hill and said, thank you. This is great. You know, people need it. What kind of guardrails are you putting on this? What kind of delivery of the money are you putting on it? Because remember, we're payments and fintech friends, guys. You know, we can help. Please let us help. And the feedback from several said, well, our job was to appropriate it. Our job wasn't to control it. And I'm sitting here as a taxpayer saying, wait, what? So I watched it, and we all watched it, right? It went from the federal to the state to the local. And each time it moved, too often the technology got worse and worse and worse. So I get to do a lot of work in anti-money laundering, anti-terrorist finance, that kind of stuff. And so some colleagues called who monitor the dark web. This was right after it was announced, the first trillion. And they said, you don't have the security clearance to see our screens, but you have enough for us to tell you what's on the screen. And it was Christmas. The fraudsters on the dark web were jumping with glee. Because as soon as that money appropriation was announced, there were postings for COBOL programmers back to old technology. So all this money dumped with organizations that might not have ever had more than 100,000, and now they've got 10 million or 100 million that they're supposed to be dispersing. So we saw in COVID, to answer your earlier question, there's an article. I don't often quote Rolling Stone in podcasts, at least not this kind of podcast. But they came out with an article last year that had all kinds of good citations that 1 trillion of the 5 trillion that went out in COVID went to fraud.
That's a lot.
It is. And all of us who are fintech geeks, and this is part of PAL, right? Let's be ready in advance. Let's not sit there and wait till the money dumps. Because so much of it was synthetic identities. The unemployment, that extra 300 a week, some of the studies say 51% went to synthetic identities. And yet there's people in need who didn't get it, right? So we find in any disaster or aid package, there's three tranches of money that go out. First of all, the fraudsters get it. They figure out all the permutations, and they're the first ones. Then those of us who have bank accounts, and then the underbanked, if there's any money left. And to your point, Reid, it's not unique to disaster. I testified on Capitol Hill on identity theft around tax refunds. So it's a problem not just with disaster, but we as an industry are better than this. We can be educating and piloting and proof of concept and show it's not the rest of the world's responsibility to understand fintech and payments. That's us. And that's part of me being excited to be here and to be part of Faster Payments Council and speak probably 35 times a year at government and private sector events to say, if the good guys come together, the only loser is the bad guy, right? Keep the fraudsters out, and 20 to 51% more money becomes available for those who need it, and small businesses, or we just reduce our own taxes because now 20 to 51% isn't going to fraud. But that's on us. And that's my call out to all of us who are experts at Faster Payments or listening to this is let's evangelize our capabilities and let's do these proof of concepts.
Yeah, and you have the added benefit of stopping some bad guys from doing bad stuff at the same time that you're helping us do good stuff, which see that seems like a pretty good trade. All right, let's move on. Let's play a game. As you know, we like to play a game called buy or sell. So I'll put out some propositions and you're going to either agree and buy or disagree and sell and then let us know why. Okay, the first one, we are just scratching the surface of the good that public-private partnerships can do for Americans.
I absolutely buy that. And government has literally said, and that's why we've got several proof of concepts running right now. Government will say, we rely on the private sector to innovate and to solve problems. Go prove it and bring it back to us. So we've got several very, very large government agencies that you would know that are observers on these pilots and proof of concepts, right? They are right there watching everything. Distilling it down to be able to feed it into the programs once it's proven to the scale we need.
All right, so that's a buy. Every disaster is pretty much the same. So we can just develop one national playbook to address them.
Sell kind of.
Okay.
So every disaster is not the same. A pandemic is global, right? A flood is regional, flood or hurricane. Tornado is a pathway, generally. A fire is just total decimation, literally nothing left. All of them are different. So PAL has actually created six different playbooks. And it's from talking to people impacted. And then and I was in Hurricane Harvey with the muck boots and the gas mask. And that's way different than responding to the fire here in Santa Fe.
Yeah, one of my kids is named Harvey, and he doesn't like it that there's that bad hurricane name for him. Faster payments can be a game changer when it comes to disaster funding, buy or sell.
Buy, absolutely buy. But we've saw in COVID, faster isn't always better. So faster with the proper rails, guardrails, knowledge.
Right. And that's something I like to talk about all the time is like just because the money is able to move faster doesn't mean you can't do things before you put the transaction into the network, right? You can and should do things before you do that.
Absolutely. Wait, I'm going to add one thing to that because exactly what you said is one of the biggest education pieces. So we talked earlier, it's not the world's job to understand fintech and payments, right? So on the Payments as a Lifeline website, there's a paper called Power of Payments. It's one page, lots of pictures, easy read. But it explains things like you're talking about. So if we get huge hotel foundation, which we've had, right? Came and said, we want to put $5 million into this area and we want it to be for housing. Well, there are options in the payment system to say $5 million and control it to only be good for housing or only good for food or only good for transportation. And those are things as we educate these global foundations or even the smaller foundations. I get to serve on Good 360. If you want to look up a really good nonprofit, they have, I think, 400 of the largest foundations in the world. And it's an opportunity to say, God bless you for giving goods. You can also give money and make sure that it matches your mission.
Yeah, and it you have to ship it as like you do the goods, right?
Well, one stat out of Good 360, 60% of unsolicited goods end up in landfills. 0% of dollars end up in landfills.
There you go. I would never throw away my money. All right, we should all go check out the Hot Air Balloon Festival at least once in our lives. Buy or sell?
I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I will add an insider tip. So the Balloon Fiesta is amazing. There's also something called Zozobra, Zozobra. Look up Zozobra Festival. This is the 100th year.
Wow.
It's really cool. So do both.
Yeah, New Mexico is beautiful if you haven't been there, listeners. Check it out. Creating a good bank-based payments experience for an unbanked or underbanked ex individual in a disaster scenario can build trust that helps those individuals become fully banked. Buy or sell?
I buy with a caveat that when we say bank-based payments, there are a lot of people. Well, there's 50 to 80 million underbanked people in the US, right? 3 billion globally. And there's a lot of people that if you say the word bank, maybe it's the country they're from, maybe they've bounced a few checks and now they can't get a bank account, whatever. They need a system with access to the financial mainstream. But words matter, and choosing the right words with the right populations matter.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. How about ensuring all users can trust instant payments is fundamental to the adoption and usage of that new payment type?
But I don't think it has to be all users yet. Like any innovation, it comes in waves. So we, as Faster Payments, and I get to serve on the Digital Assets Working Group. We're really out there, right, for innovation, is to not set false expectations, whether it's with your investors or your regulators, that this is going to come in one fell swoop, because it never does. Look for those milestones and be proud and celebrate those milestones of small percentages, and we'll get there. We do all ultimately need to trust, but for now, we need to celebrate the victories along the road.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, like it'll feel like the progress is very slow, and but eventually we'll look back and be like, whoa, that actually happened pretty fast. All right, let's move on to our lightning round. Extreme weather events are becoming more common. How does that affect what you're doing at PAL?
Exponentializes the importance. Those extreme weather events are coming bigger, faster, and to areas that have never had them before. So we really, really need to be prepared at scale.
Something you've learned in this role that is probably applicable across a lot of the payments ecosystem.
Listen and acknowledge what you don't know and who you don't know. It's best to have friends to take you to the table versus just showing up and saying, I'm from FinTech, I'm here to help.
All right. Yeah, it's Saturday morning. You're at your house. You got a cup of coffee. What music is on playing before you? What do you got going?
I love jazz, live jazz and blues. Great music here in Santa Fe. If it's Sunday morning, it's WWOZ, which is the New Orleans radio station. They do some really cool Sunday gospel. Trombone Shorty is a favorite. And come to Santa Fe, and I'll show you all kinds of fabulous jazz, blues, all kinds of funky stuff.
Love it. Love it. All right. Biggest risk associated with disaster relief funding that needs to be understood and addressed.
Over enthusiasm and lack of performance. So it's kind of like joining a gym. You don't go to the gym the first 2 weeks of January because everybody's there and then they hurt themselves because they overdid it. So when there's a disaster, I can't tell you how many calls I get from CEOs of all kinds of financial services. We want to help. Well, now they're trying to build the plane while it's flying. And you know, always welcome the help and try to plug them in. But have a sustainable, reasonable level of enthusiasm and treat this like a vertical, like you would healthcare as a vertical, insurance claims as a vertical, disaster and humanitarian aid is a vertical.
All right, something coming soon in payments that people should be excited about.
Oh, in addition to the Faster Payment Spring meeting.
Right. Of
Yeah.
course. Yeah. So to be fair, this episode is airing the day of the spring member meeting. So they're no longer looking forward to it. They're experiencing it in real time and probably listening to us on their way home.
You gotta love the real time. So, having been around for the health savings accounts, if you remember back in the day when you said read things go slowly, we thought those things were never going to take off. And now I've been on the American Bankers Association HSA Council, I think, for 15 years, right? And now it's just household, right? But at the time, nobody knew. One of the key pieces of technology is for payments geeks, SKU level off, where now going into a store, instead of just saying it's a grocery store or it's not, it can be it's a grocery store and here's the milk and which you can buy, and here's the liquor that you can't with this particular thing. And that's becoming much more mainstream.
Yeah, and I think that opens up lots of things in terms of, like you said, restrictions, but also in terms of different ways that people could be marketed to, or financial services could be marketed to folks depending on what they're purchasing. I think there's, the mind starts to move, right? But final lightning round question: something you would like to use faster payments to do in your personal life?
This sounds kind of corny, but I'm in Santa Fe. There's a lot of folks that are in need, and giving them a box of food or a blanket, right? Not so helpful all the time. So if we could get faster payments, and I'll go to the PAL tagline, right person, right time, right purpose. Almost everybody has a phone. Even folks that don't, or they're experiencing homeless, they have a phone. We need to be better. I need to be better at understanding how to help these folks in need. And as a banker and a taxpayer, I'd like to say this money is good for food. This money is good for housing, and really feel good about it.
Right. Love it. Love it. All right, Kirsten, thanks so much for joining us. Any final thoughts for our audience before I let you go?
All right, here's a baseless plug. Please go to the Payments as a Lifeline website, pull down the power of payments, and help us evangelize what is in this power so we can make sure that the good guys get the funds and we keep the fraudsters out.
Great stuff. Hey, thank you so much. It's a good conversation.
Thank you.
And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again to Kirsten for joining us. And don't forget to register for the spring member meeting at fasterpaymentscouncil.org. Talk to you all in a couple weeks.